It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Monson Show. I am Kim Monson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Monson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And email me at kim@kimmonson.com as well. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. And if you sign up for our weekly newsletter, that goes out on Sundays. We have all kinds of great information. We'll be highlighting the upcoming guests, as well as guest op-eds by me, and also our new Sounding Off with Kim Monson podcast. So be sure and check all that out. We've got an important show planned for you today. Producer Steve and I are going to go through some headlines here in the first and second segment. In the third segment, Trent England has a new book out. It says, Why We Must Save the Electoral College. He is the executive director of Save Our States, and he will outline why the Electoral College, why we need it. He makes the case if we lose the Electoral College in favor of a direct election, the interest of Americans living in flyover country will be inconsequential. Presidential candidates will be able to win an election without ever setting foot in the majority of states. And our founders realized that they wanted everybody to have a voice, and that's why we have the Electoral College. And if in fact this national popular vote, which will be on the ballot here in Colorado in November, if that passes, then we're giving our vote and our voice here in Colorado to the big population centers like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, and New York. So if you think that your voice is important, just like the founders of America did, then we need to protect the Electoral College. And I also want to ask him about mail-in ballots. You know, apparently President Trump made a comment about mail-in ballots where there is opportunity for fraud. We know that is the case, but he apparently has been fact-checked, if you will, by Twitter. So we'll talk about that in just a few moments. But as we look at these issues, my friends, put our thinking caps on. And people that there are kids that are graduating from college that do not use their thinking caps because I think of a bit of indoctrination by professors there. And we want people that can critically think. And the way to do that is ask questions. As Rudyard Kipling said, he says, ask what and why and when and how and where and who. And so that's really, really important as we're looking at these issues that are facing our country here today. Always like to say thank you to the team, to producer Steve, to Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. It's a great team to get to work with, as well as the folks here at Crawford. And to each of you listeners, thank you. You're treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose today. Go out and strive for excellence. Be productive, industrious, and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Producer Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Pretty darn good for this time of the week and a mixed up week. I'm not sure what day it is, but hey, in tying in that quote by Kipling that we read almost daily, Bill O'Reilly, his commentary yesterday, he nailed it down, and I need to get it desperately so we can, you know, share it in terms of the importance of what Kipling was saying there in terms of, you know, just being aware. In his commentary yesterday, he just, boy, there is just no room for debate on what the importance is of staying tuned in. And I'll try to get it for us for tomorrow.
Okay, that sounds great. So let's go to our inspiration. And this is by Noah Webster. And Noah Webster Jr. was an American lexicographer. Do you know what a lexicographer is, Steve?
No, let's just pretend I don't.
Okay, it's a person who writes, compiles, and or edits a dictionary. They examine how words come into being and how they change in terms of pronunciation, spelling, usage, and meaning. The most influential lexicographer of the 18th century, they say, was Samuel Johnson, whose Dictionary of the English Language appeared in 1755. Now, we all, have all heard of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. So here we go with Noah Webster. He was an American lexicographer, a textbook pioneer, English language spelling reformer, political writer, editor, and prolific author. He's been called the father of American scholarship and education. His blue-backed speller books taught five generations of American children how to spell and read. Maybe we should go back to that. You know what? Webster's name has become synonymous with dictionary in the United States, especially the modern Merriam-Webster Dictionary that was first published in 1828 as an American Dictionary of the English Language. He was born in 1758, and he died in 1843. So there's your history lesson. Here we go. Inspiration. This is by Noah Webster. He says, if the citizens neglect their duty and place unprincipled men in office, the government will soon be corrupted. If a Republican government fails to secure public prosperity and happiness, it must be because the citizens neglect the divine commands and elect bad men to make and administer the laws.
Amen.
Yes. I actually had a...
And here we are.
here we are. You know what? Actually, I'll talk about that as we get a little further into the show. Our funnies for today. Okay, and I thought since we were talking college, electoral college, I looked for college jokes. So here you go. Employer, forget everything you learned in college. You won't need it working here. Potential employee, I never went to college. Employer, oh, sorry, unfortunately, you're not qualified for the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So,
do you know who Mike Rowe is?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just watched a 10-minute presentation by him in terms of, again, trying to get people's attention, young people's attention. It's like, make sure you know that college course, that college 4 years that you're signing up for is what you're really needing in life. And don't overlook the trades. And then he comes in and gives some excellent examples of, you know, why the difference and why you need to look. And don't assume that that college degree is going to get you where you want to go.
Well, and you know what? Kids have been told that for so many years, get that college degree. But when you talked about college degree, it used to be, you know, like engineering, you know, the hard sciences, biology, those things where you could go out and get a job. And now we've moved over to women's studies and different things, that the only way that you get a job is that you are working typically for some educational institution or some public entity that lives off of basically taxpayer dollars. And it's not going out and creating anything, like you just mentioned, the trades. You know, even when times get tough, you know, through this whole COVID-19 thing, we had a plumbing issue. And so we needed to have our plumber there. You know, there are things that people need, and some of these college degree jobs that are out there, people do not need. And I think that that's one of the things about this whole COVID-19 thing, is we're going to find out that those are jobs that actually you don't need to go spend a whole bunch of money and then, you know, come out with all of this debt and not be able to get a job like you want. But kids have been, in a way, I think that they've been sold a bill of goods on this, Steve.
And who was selling him that bill of goods?
The people that, that you know, are in higher education,
yeah,
right?
And, you know, people who were prospering through it. So every time this culture hits a brick wall, you could just follow the money, follow the money. So enough said.
Okay, and the money is really going to change significantly now that we've been going through this whole COVID-19 thing. And, you know, Steve, I cannot for the life of me figure out why we've got these blue state Democrat governors that have shut down their states, and now they're coming back and acting like that they care so much about people and that they want to get their states opened up. I mean, they have decimated these economies, and it's almost like they don't care. And it seems to me like they want to, in some ways, keep us locked down, some of these states, until it hurts so much that they think it's going to, I think, affect Donald Trump for the election. I mean, I cannot for the life of me figure it out, because everyday people are hurting. I just don't get it.
The closer we get to November, I think the more apparent these lines that have been drawn, maybe they thought with invisible ink, are going to become more visible. And It's, I don't know. It's like I've jokingly said a little while ago, spin the wheel of your favorite Democratic governor around the country and look at the trouble they're in, one way or the other.
Well, and so I hope that people realize that these are the people that have made these decisions that have decimated the economy. Now, they're trying like crazy to blame Trump for everything, but it is because of these decisions, state by state, that have really decimated the economy. You know, yesterday when we were talking with Pfiffner, with the Tabor Foundation, he was talking about two different couples, and one couple might, you know, actually be very frugal, save for a rainy day, and the other couple, you know, may spend every dollar they have and figure that their rainy day fund is the equity in their house. And this whole example, if you didn't hear the show yesterday, you should go back and hear it, is in talking about Colorado, that under Tabor, Colorado is supposed to have a 3% emergency fee. And actually each different governmental entity should. So like your city, your county, your state. And so what's happened is these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties have figured out that what they'll use as the emergency fund in the state, in the case of Colorado, is real estate, the buildings that house Colorado employees, the state of Colorado employees. So what are you going to do? And who's going to buy those buildings? I mean, Steve, it makes no sense when we look at that. But it's the same way in federalism. And it took a while for me to actually get my brain around federalism. What that means is that the federal government is a bit smaller and there's states' rights. Statist means that the federal government has more and more control. It's almost in a way like the words are backwards. Have you ever thought about that, Steve? It took me a while to kind of figure that out.
Well, there's so much doublespeak and whatever other terms you want to apply to it. And you just can't go and find one particular read on a given subject without checking it from another direction to see that it holds up.
Well, true that. And we'll talk about that here in just a minute. But our style of government, it's called federalism, and that means that we have states' rights. So when Trump came out and said that the states have the decisions to make on how they open up and how they actually react to this COVID-19 thing, you saw many of the quote-unquote statists, the progressives, people that want more and more control. They wanted Trump to take control of everything so that they could blame him for everything that's going on. I mean, you can see that, case in point, with Andrew Cuomo down or up in New York. He wants to make these decisions, bad decisions. He wants to blame Trump. But going to what federalism means is that we have 50 different states, 50 different experiments, but we have the blue states that have spent into oblivion. And now they are going to the federal government and they're wanting money to bail them out. And that is totally antithetical to actually responsible government. Each state should be responsible for the decisions they make. For example, Illinois, they are in dire financial straits, a lot of it because of their pension system. And people are leaving because they don't like the high taxes. And so they're going to other states. And that is the beauty of America. So when California or Colorado, we saw Governor Polis get on a plane and go to Washington, D.C. to beg Trump for money. We need to be responsible for the decisions that we make, and that is the beauty of federalism, Steve.
Well, it's funny. At 4:30 this morning, a feature played, just a short feature, called Whatever Happened to the Constitution? And they were highlighting the 10th Amendment, which basically, if my understanding, pushes so much government back to the states, back to the local level. And yet,
it says,
until Woodrow Wilson came along, it was working just fine. But Wilson did his best to destroy, you know, the 10th Amendment or find ways to work around it. Number one was income tax. And, you know, the point of today's installment of Whatever Happened to the Constitution is, hey, we tried. But look at the people like Wilson or Obama who were just doing their best to work around it.
Right. So we've had a little over 100 years now of this whole progressive movement. And because of the American idea, I think that we've been able to to do very well typically as individuals because of all the prosperity of the American idea of property rights, of this, these rights in the vision of the Declaration of Life, Liberty, and Pursuit of Happiness. We see now with the COVID-19 that these progressives want to, basically shut down our economies. They want to control us. And let's go to break, Steve. We'll continue the conversation with these headlines out there. And then in the third and fourth segment, we'll talk with Trent England. So this is Kim Munson. Be sure and check out the website, kimmunson.com. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Go over to Facebook and give us a like and sign up for our weekly newsletter. It is an important way to start your week. We've got, we'll highlight our guests coming up. We've got op-eds, our new podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson, all kinds of important information. Let's take what Mike Gallagher was talking about that in his piece or in his little promo as we were coming off a break, and that is this whole thing with Twitter and President Trump. Apparently, President Trump made a statement in regards to mail-in ballots, that there was opportunity for fraud and that it could actually affect the election. He's absolutely correct. We have mail-in ballots here in Colorado. And quite frankly, people all get a ballot, and they don't even understand many of the issues. They don't understand the candidates. But I remember I had a conversation with a young woman that had recently graduated from college, and she said how important it is to vote. And I said, but you need to know about what you're voting about. She said, well, you just need to vote. And that is what has been pushed into these kids, that there is this important sacred honor or right to vote, which is true. But a lot of people don't know what they're voting about. And there's something called ballot harvesting. And I've seen that in a variety of the elections that I've worked in where, basically, and the progressives actually, it was an art on how they would actually go to like either a nursing home or to an apartment building, and they would harvest ballots there. They would make sure that people voted, and they, as long as they knew that they were going to vote the way they wanted them to, then they would go out and get those ballots, and they would take them and drop them off at the drop-in location. Now, there's I think there's a law or statute here in Colorado that people are only supposed to do 10 or pick up 10 ballots, but you know, they do 10 at a time. So Trump is absolutely correct on this. But Steve, apparently Twitter, Jack Dorsey said they're going to fact check him. And a lot of people, and I guess there's a lot of different links that Dorsey has put as a disclaimer on these tweets. This is unprecedented, Steve. People need to go out and get their own information on this. This is almost like yellow journalism on the part of Twitter.
Well, a little humor first, and then I'll respond to that. Again, always great memes on Facebook from talented people. You know the little sticker you get when, once you go on election day and says, I voted?
Right.
And you put that on your lapel? This is the same sticker that says, I voted and voted and voted and voted. So, this is really kind of cool to me because, this thing got kicked off. Trump commenting on voter fraud and this vote by mail thing and opening the door to, you know, more fraud, which is just what we need. And it's kind of interesting to see how Facebook and Twitter kind of monitor each other. But now they're in this face off, this duel over who's got the truth. Facebook basically says, you know, that's not our job, which is laughable because have you all heard of this thing called Facebook jail? I've been in it a time or two. And, you know, if they don't like what you're posting, they shut you down, they put you in jail. You can't post much of anything. And after a certain amount of time, you know, they'll let you out. So my hat's off right now to the CEO of Twitter, who's...
Facebook.
The CEO of Twitter blasting off at on Zuckerberg, basically telling him this is not what we're all about here. And let me read the quote, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Regarding fact-checking, there is somebody ultimately accountable for our actions as a company, and that's me, Jack Dorsey. Please leave our employees out of this. We'll continue to point out incorrect or disputed information about elections globally, and we will admit to our own and any mistakes that we make. This does not make us the arbiter of truth. Our intention is to connect the dots of conflicting statements and show the information in dispute so that people can judge for themselves. More transparency from us is critical. So, you know, he's talking to me. I mean, that transparency, and how many different news organizations out there, it's like, we provide the information, you choose. I think that was one of Fox's things for years. So I'm totally into what the Jack Dorsey is saying. And Zuckerberg, I don't know. Your actions speak very loudly, sir.
Well, I agree with you regarding the actions of Facebook. But now, Steve, my understanding, as I was looking this up, is that Twitter was actually providing articles, links to articles attached to the president's tweets. And so that seems to me like a bit of yellow journalism, because they're not showing both sides on that. They're just showing one side on that. And I think it's unprecedented that they would do that with, you know, with presidents, right there. It needs to be something separate where they're making a statement about what they believe. And so there seems to me like something that's not quite right on this, Steve. But you think that what he's doing is okay, huh?
Well, I just appreciate the fact that these two guys are going toe-to-toe. And like I've shared with you many times before, when postmodernism first started, you know, was on the horizon, one of the first eye-catching thing was the word truth. And in the postmodernist mind is, well, whose truth? Your truth or my truth? You know, like, there is no undisputable truth. It's we can have many different levels of truth.
Okay, so let's talk about truth on this. So mail-in ballots, the president said that there is an opportunity for fraud in it, right? Isn't that basically what he said?
Oh, yeah.
There's ballot harvesting. So instead of over here on this whole fact-checking by Twitter, let's talk about that. Is there the opportunity for fraud with mail-in ballots? Is there the opportunity for fraud when in Colorado, when you go get your driver's license, you can go ahead and register to vote? Now, I can't remember if this passed, but I think this was a piece of legislation. I'm sure Patty will be checking this here in just a minute. But there was a piece of legislation that said that when you go in to get your driver's license, and that they will either register you to vote, or they will register you to vote, and you can either, if you do not say you're either Democrat or Republican, they will register you as an independent. Now, Cloward and Piven and Dr. Jill Vecchio, and she's going to be our guest tomorrow, so we'll talk about this some more. But Cloward and Piven were married. They were Columbia professors. And there is a picture of them back in the early 90s with Bill Clinton, where they are signing the motor voter legislation that allowed Americans to, when they registered got their driver's license, that they could register to vote. Now, in America, we go back to what Noah Webster, our quote earlier today, we need to be responsible citizens. We need to understand what we're voting on. And we also can't be lazy. If people are too lazy to go to register to vote, if they're too lazy to go to vote, then maybe they shouldn't be voting. And because that means if they're too lazy to possibly, you know, take the effort to go to vote, they possibly are too lazy to understand the issues, and they may be too lazy to actually find out what the candidates really stand for. Instead, they just watch the TV ads, they watch the ads that are now popping up on social media, and they go, oh, or I like the way that guy sounds. I mean, that is one of the reasons why I think we've gotten into the world of hurt that we're in right now, Steve.
Absolutely. And I just commented you know, on another somebody else's comment recently, it's like, well, yeah, they'll stay in this state of unknowing what's going down until like 2 days before the election. Then they'll wake up and try to assume this message, you know, take on this massive amount of data and information, and you know, they still won't be effective.
It's overwhelming.
It's almost a daily thing. To indulge in and to imbibe on what's going on around you at any level of government.
Well, and you also have to ask the question, why? You know, why is it that these politicians and bureaucrats want to dilute our vote through the national popular vote, possibly dilute your vote if you've gone out to be informed, dilute your vote by somebody that just gets a mail-in ballot and at the last minute goes, oh, I need to vote because it's my right. And so we need to ask those questions. Let's ask a question of Jason McBride. What do you think about all this, Jason McBride?
Happy birthday to you. All right, okay. Jason, you know what's going down here. Somebody tried to sneak in a birthday yesterday, and I didn't know about it. You didn't know about it. What do you have to say about that?
Collusion going on. Kim colluded with herself to hide it. But, you know, Kim, after one more day, you're mature enough to handle a birthday.
Well, actually, I got a lot of wishes on Facebook, and I said, it's great to be 29 again, Jason. It's really nice to be 29 again.
Isn't that getting boring after all these years?
The question is, what number time are you 29? But let's not go there.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I do appreciate the birthday wishes. And I look at it as it's great to have another year under my belt. And we've got a lot of work to do as we continue on. So thank you, Jason. Thank you, Steve.
You are welcome.
I guess the market was happy that it was my birthday yesterday, though, huh?
Yeah, that's the whole reason that it went up, and another pretty good strong day yesterday, Kim. The Dow was up over 500 points again, pulling further away from its recent breakout. The S&P got back above 3,000. It also got back above its 200-day moving average, and the NASDAQ wasn't left out yesterday like it kind of was the day before a little bit. It was also up about 72 points, so pretty strong all the way across the board, even with as much manufactured bad news as they can seem to come out to try to stop the reopening, stop the economy, stop anything positive, and stop the market. The market doesn't seem to care right now. It's just moving higher.
Well, and you know what? To bet against American ingenuity, creativity, innovation on the long term, I think, is not a good idea. You know, we have all this volatility, particularly on this COVID-19 thing. We've seen all this volatility. But the NASDAQ, when we talked yesterday, you said it was only, what, off about 5% off of its highs? So it's got to be bumping up next to that.
It's getting very, very close. You know, and again, I am positive on the markets in America, and I think everything's great. But, you know, I'll reiterate what I said yesterday. It may not be a horrible idea to think about taking, you know, nail down some gains if you have them here. I mean, we have shot up pretty much like a rocket ship right off of the bottom. I'm sure that it's very possible there's still some surprises that may come that we may not be happy about, and it will take a little bit of time at least for the economy to recover and the jobs to come back, and I expect there will be some actual hiccups and some news in that regard that may not be what we'd like to hear. So and if you've got big gains, if you had the guts to be buying when things were really low, it may not be the worst idea to nail down a little bit of the gains and build a little powder keg of cash again to be ready for the next opportunity.
So what people should do is to talk with you, Jason, and your colleagues at Presidential to look at that strategy. And I totally agree. When things go up, you know, that's the time where it's difficult to sell. And of course, it's difficult to buy when things are so scary. So it's good to sit down with you and put together your plan. So your phone number, Jason, what is that?
You betcha. You can give us a call at 303-694-1600. Natalie will be at the switchboards at 7:30. Or get to know us a little better online at AIR, that's A-I-R, presidential.com. That's AIR, presidential.com.
Okay, Jason, and I agree. Sometimes it's nice to, like you say, take a little bit of cash and keep your powder dry because these markets do move up and down. But it's exciting to me that after all this scary stuff that there's some good news in the markets right now. So I love that.
You betcha. Well, happy birthday again, Kim, and you have a great show.
Okay, thanks so much. We're going to go to break, and that was Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. When we come back, we'll be chatting with Trent England. He has a new book out, Why We Must Save the Electoral College. And this is a very important conversation right here in Colorado, because there will be on the ballot this November a question on whether or not that we will give our votes to the national popular vote. We should vote no on that. And as you know, Mesa County Commissioner Rose Puglisi and Monument Mayor Don Wilson went to work and got this question. They got the initiative on the ballot. The vote should be no. We'll talk with Trent England on why it is so important to protect the Electoral College. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. Very important conversation here today. We'll be talking with Trent England. He is the Save Our States Executive Director, and he has a new book out, Why We Must Save the Electoral College. Trent England, welcome to the show.
Kim, thanks for having me on.
This is a very important conversation here in Colorado. As you know, we have a ballot question this November on whether or not we will give our votes to the big population centers, the national popular vote, or whether or not we in Colorado will honor the Electoral College. And the Electoral College is, the progressives have been after this for a while. I remember having a conversation with a woman that I think she had her doctorate degree, and she was talking about how we need to get rid of the Electoral College. So the progressives at universities and colleges have been working diligently trying to encourage our kids to want to get rid of the Electoral College, and it's important to save it. So tell us why.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that is hard to understand unless you have the opportunity to sort of think it through and understand how it works. And the Electoral College keeps the power over presidential elections in the state in a couple of different ways. And that has some really profoundly positive effects. I mean, for one thing, probably the simplest, is just that Colorado right now has its own voice in presidential elections. I mean, this national popular vote plan would literally give Los Angeles more power over Colorado's electoral votes than Colorado has. Because Los Angeles, you look at Los Angeles County,
it's bigger. It's far bigger than Colorado is. And so, you know, if you just go to this national popular vote system, if you're in a small state, even a medium-sized state, you lose your voice. But it also, it keeps the election problems where they start. So if, you know, people are concerned about the way they hold elections in Chicago, well, all they can do right now is mess up Illinois, right? All they can, you know, if they're stuffing ballot boxes in Chicago like they used to do, they can steal Illinois, but they can't steal Colorado unless you go to a national popular vote system. And then, you know, when you're stuffing a ballot box in Chicago, or if you're suppressing the vote in L.A., or any election shenanigans or any election problems anywhere in the country, instead of being contained in the state where they happen, those things would spill out nationwide. You might need nationwide recounts. And ultimately, states would lose control over elections because if you can steal Colorado's votes from Chicago, the only government that can do anything about that is the federal government, Washington, D.C. And that, you know, frankly, that's a big part of the progressive agenda here. Nancy Pelosi has talked about that. Elizabeth Warren talked about it a lot last year. They want to get rid of the Electoral College because they want Washington, D.C., to be in charge of our elections. And I think that's just a terrible idea because it means putting presidential appointees in charge of presidential elections. And that's, you know, that's more of a banana republic thing. We've always had this system of states where we decentralize power in the United States, and it's benefited us in all kinds of different ways.
And, you know, it seems so interesting to me, Trent England, that there has been a real fervent dialogue about why we need to have the national popular vote. And it's almost, I think it's a bit disingenuous. It says that make your vote count, give it up for the national popular. I mean, they don't say that. They say make your vote and your voice count, and yet they want to give it to these big population centers. And you just mentioned something about Los Angeles. And I remember Judicial Watch had actually filed a lawsuit where I think it was in Los Angeles City that there were more people registered to vote than there could be potential legal voters. Do you recall that? Am I remembering that correctly or not?
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's federal law that requires jurisdictions to basically try to keep their voting rolls clean, and they weren't doing that in Los Angeles. I think it was in the county, because I think the counties there run elections. They just weren't doing that, which is really, really dangerous in a place where you vote by mail, because it guarantees that you're sending out ballots to people who have moved, people who have died, people who have lost their eligibility, right? If you're not keeping those voter rolls clean, then you are kind of flooding the system with ballots that have no place to go, which, you know, best case scenario, a lot of those ballots just don't get returned. And people have been talking about that lately, how many of these ballots get sent out and they just disappear. But worst case scenario, some of those ballots do get returned because they wind up in the hands of people who say, well, you know, maybe I'm not supposed to vote, but they sent me a ballot anyway. I mean, sometimes it's even innocent. I mean, I've heard of, immigrants, people who are legal residents in the United States, but they're not citizens. They're not eligible to vote. And, they may not speak English well. They get sent a ballot, and they may think, well, I guess I'm supposed to vote, right, because they sent me a ballot. And then they wind up committing a felony because government hasn't policed the election system. And obviously you have times when people intentionally commit election fraud. And I used to live in Washington State, and this was an issue up there where you would have people who would be registered at college and they'd also be registered at home, and lo and behold, both ballots show up, right? And you have obvious election fraud because the county election officials were not keeping those vote rolls clean. So, you know, that it's really frightening when you think about, you know, turning over control of Colorado's voice in presidential elections to some of these big population centers where they don't even take election integrity seriously. So, you know, we really don't have a very good idea of how much risk there is, how much fraud there is out there. But we know the risk is really high. We just, you know, it's hard to know with election fraud, because successful election fraud never gets caught, right? To be successful, it doesn't get detected, and so it's hard to know how much of it goes on.
Well, and Trent, you hit on something, and that is these mail-in ballots. Colorado is a mail-in ballot state. First of all, think about how expensive it is to send out all of these ballots, and if we're not keeping the voter rolls clean, and I know by personal experience that they're not, then in essence, it opens up the opportunity for fraud. And so this whole mail-in ballot thing with President Trump tweeting out that there's potential for you know, how it affects elections, there could be fraud. I think he's absolutely correct. But now Twitter, Jack Dorsey, seems to be pushing back on that, saying he's fact-checking that. What's your thoughts on that, Trent Inklin?
Well, it's just absurd. I mean, the first problem with election security, and I used to work in this area, and it's too bad that it's become so politicized, because everybody, you know, from Jack Dorsey to whoever, ought to care about election security and be a little bit more open-minded and thoughtful about what the risks are. The problem with working on election security is you can never prove how much fraud happens, but because of what I just mentioned, successful fraud by definition goes undetected. Right. And I mean, this is also true. This isn't the only area where it's like this. Embezzlement in business, you know, white collar crimes in business. Nobody knows exactly how much of that kind of crime goes on, because, again, for it to be successful, it has to go undetected. This isn't like robbery where there's a victim left behind who knows he's a victim. When votes are stolen, all of us legal voters, right, we don't know that we've been victimized. Unless somebody is able to detect it. So the people like Jack Dorsey, who claim to know how much election fraud goes on, are just, I mean, they at best, they are being sort of knee-jerk partisans and not being thoughtful about this. And at worst, they're really covering for people who do commit election fraud. My friend Hans von Spakowski at the Heritage Foundation has put together this amazing database of over 12,000 proven or 1,200, excuse me, proven incidents of election fraud. I mean, these are things where there were convictions in court or findings by a court. All of these instances of fraud, some of them really significant, some of them that affected election outcomes. And when you go through that, it becomes clear very quickly that the tool of choice for election fraud is vote by mail. I mean, you know, over and over, the only way that election fraud cases were made possible was because they were voting by mail. And then when you think through some of these things, you realize how hard it was to detect them. I mean, some of these instances of vote fraud, you know, were just so obvious, or you know, they did something so foolish that they were detected. And you start thinking, you know, my word, there could be a lot of this that goes on, and you know, we're not taking it very seriously, especially in these states that have gone completely to vote by mail. You know, as you say, it's an expensive process. It is just very hard to make sure in a vote by mail system that people are being honest and the people who are supposed to fill out those ballots are doing it. So it's a huge problem and a real tragedy for our system that it's become a partisan issue over just having secure elections. It's crazy.
Okay, well, Trent Inklin, let's go to break. When we come back, let's continue this discussion about the national popular vote, the Electoral College, and mail-in ballots. Very important, so stay tuned.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well, and we'd appreciate it if you would go over and give us a like at Facebook. On the line with me this morning is Trent England. He has a new book out, Why We Must Save the Electoral College. He is the executive director of Save Our States. Trent England, such an important conversation. You know, I think we need to explain to our listeners what the Electoral College does, because the founders, it's actually brilliant. And I know that for a while it's been getting a bad rap, but it's brilliant because what they were trying to do is to give a balance between the large population, or the states with a large population, and those with less population. So they wanted to get a balance so that both of them had their voices. And so explain to our listeners what the founders came up with.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're exactly right. This was a search for balance and for some sort of, you know, checks on political power. When the founders started talking about how to elect a president, the default was a parliamentary system. That was actually what they started with in the Virginia Plan, which was the rough draft for our Constitution. And a lot of pieces of the Virginia Plan survived, and they are just a part of the Constitution. But this was one thing that the American founders focused on and really talked about through the whole Constitutional Convention. They didn't figure out what to do until the very end, until after all the other compromises that people, you know, typically focus on. And they didn't want a parliamentary system because they didn't want Congress to control the executive. They didn't want all the politics that happened in Congress to become what determines, you know, who becomes president. They wanted the president to have more independence than that. So they started talking about, well, we could have a popular vote. You know, what if we just had a popular vote for president? And they realized very quickly exactly what you suggest, Kim, which is that in a popular vote system, a direct popular vote, you would basically give all the power to the biggest states, or, you know, really today to the biggest cities. You know, a few places in the country would have a lot of power, especially if they were polarized, right? Especially if they tended to really strongly favor just one party or just one candidate. And, you know, so that was their concern. I mean, back at the time of the American founding, Virginia and New York were the biggest states. Philadelphia was already a very big city. And, you know, if you weren't from Virginia, New York, or Pennsylvania, you would look at a popular vote system and say, look, we're never going to have a say in who wins the presidency. And so they came up with a compromise, and it was James Madison from Virginia who really led that effort, with some encouragement from Benjamin Franklin from Pennsylvania. So it was actually some of the delegates from the bigger states recognized that a popular vote system might serve their state, but it wasn't good for the country. And so they helped come up with this system that created checks and balances, that says, look, it's, you know, fundamentally it's a democratic system, right? They left the power in the states. All of the states have opted to hold just ordinary elections to determine how the state casts its electoral votes for president. And then, you know, obviously the presidential electors cast votes. So it's a democratic process, but it's a two-step democratic process. that funnels through the states. And when we look at it today and compare it to the handful of countries around the world that have a direct popular vote, because there really aren't very many. When you look at the bigger countries, or the more developed countries, like countries in Europe, most countries are parliamentary. They don't have a direct popular vote for prime minister or for president because of these same concerns. But when you look at the countries that do, like Mexico and Russia and France, the outcomes are not all that democratic, because in France's last election is a good example. Emmanuel Macron got 23% in the first round of their election, and he was the winner. He had the most votes, because in a direct popular vote system, you also attract lots of people to run, lots of splinter parties and spoiler candidates.
Uh-huh.
And so Emmanuel Macron got 23%, Marine Le Pen got 21%, and they were the top one and two. They went to the runoff, and French voters who didn't like either one of them wound up being forced to choose between, you know, two people they really didn't like. 600,000 French voters cast a blank ballot in protest against their system. And this is what national popular vote, this national popular vote campaign, this is what they think is going to be a more democratic system. I mean, it just frankly isn't true. You go to a direct popular vote, and there are other problems. There are other people who are going to be upset and will wind up electing presidents with 23% of the national popular vote. I don't think that's more democratic. I think it's less democratic than our electoral college.
Well, yeah, most definitely. And the other brilliance, though, of the founders is these bigger states still have a bigger voice, because, you know, when we look at the electoral college map, you know, if the candidate gets certain states, then that gives them more electoral college votes. So they're still represented. And how the founders did this is that the number of electoral votes that a state has is equivalent to both the number of senators and then the number of representatives to the House of Representatives. And so the bigger states have more of a voice, but the fact that you also have the number of senators, which, that every state has two, so that balances that out. I mean, I think it's brilliant the way they figured that out, and hopefully I have that correct. Trent, you'll correct me if I don't, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they took the compromise that created Congress. And they, and like I said, they were thinking about just having Congress elect the president. They decided that was a bad idea. And so in a way, the Electoral College is just sort of a pop-up Congress, right? Every state has exactly the same number of votes as it has in the House and the Senate. But it just, these presidential electors are just created for one reason, right? Just to cast these votes for president. So there's none of the politics of Congress that get involved. But it is based on that same compromise where, the smaller states get a little bit of a boost because they're guaranteed at least three votes in the Electoral College. But, the bigger states get more. You know, California has a lot more. Texas has a lot more. So, every state has its own voice. The small states get a little bit of a boost, just kind of recognizing that there's still states in our union. They still deserve a voice. But the bigger states get more. It really is a great system, and frankly, I mean, there are some other countries around the world that have sort of modeled their election processes on ours. India uses a kind of an electoral college, and India is really the largest democratic country in the world, and they're very big, they're very diverse, and so they use an electoral college type system because when they looked around, they realized that the way we do things here in the United States is very good at checks and balances on power. Germany has a similar system.
Okay, and so let's connect the dots then. You mentioned that if, in fact, we would go to a national popular vote, and again, here in Colorado, vote no on that when you see that on the ballot this November. If we go to a national popular vote, it would really be the big cities that we would be giving our voice to. And you look at how these big cities are being run, like New York, Chicago, San Francisco, L.A. I don't think that we want the whole country run like the way those cities are being run. So first of all, there is that point to make. And second of all, the idea that we would give these our vote and our voices to these cities, it just seems like it's irresponsible. And then third is with mail-in ballot, we just mentioned the county of Los Angeles had more people or more ballots going out than they had voters. And so we can see that there is a potential for fraud. So we would be giving our voices to these cities where there's potential for fraud as well. So Trent England, what's your final thoughts on all this?
Well, you're absolutely right. This national popular vote proposal that is that Coloradans get to vote on in the fall is really dangerous. And, you know, whether people want to protect the Constitution, whether people want to protect our democratic processes, whether they want to protect Colorado's voice, right, I mean, whatever it is that people value in our system, the Electoral College really serves those things well. And there's no perfect election process. Because somebody always loses, right? There are always going to be people who are unhappy about a particular election. But when you look at how the Electoral College has worked over American history, it has helped to unify us as a nation, to protect our presidential elections, really protect the integrity of all of our elections. And we should defend the Electoral College. I mean, this is a system that works, that's in our Constitution for a reason. And I'm excited that Colorado voters get an opportunity to stand up for that.
And we also, I think, need to watch the people that the legislators that actually went ahead and put the national popular vote into law here in Colorado. We need to, I think, to take a look at that and realize that they were giving our vote and our voice to large population centers as well. Trent England, thank you so much. I have to wonder, just a very quick comment. Is all this happening because Donald Trump won in 2016? Do you think that has anything to do with it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the National Popular Vote campaign originally was created after Al Gore lost. And so it was, you know, sour grapes from that election. You know, they were pushing along, and then, you know, they really got a boost from the 2016 election when a lot of Democrats were so upset that they were looking for something to do, and this is what they came up with. So, yeah, I mean, it's really being driven by partisan sour grapes.
Okay, Trent England, we're out of time, but thank you so much. Very important. And Noah Webster said, a pure democracy is generally a very bad government, is often the most tyrannical government on earth, for a multitude is often rash and will not hear reason. So, my friends, today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.